May it please the court. MFA is a vendor of various goods and services and as such is required to collect and remit the sales tax. It is also subject to audit by the Director of Revenue and was in fact audited for a three-year period. The result of that audit was that MFA had underpaid its sales tax in the approximate amount of $8,000. Nevertheless, the director seeks to assess MFA $99,000 for the audit period. The difference is $91,000, and that's the tax that MFA erroneously computed and erroneously collected on cigarette sales for the first part of the audit period. Under section 144.190.2 of the sales tax law, MFA is entitled to a credit for erroneously computed and erroneously collected taxes, and the credit is to be against any other sales tax otherwise due. That section also allows for a refund. If there's a net overpayment of tax, the taxpayer is entitled to a refund. That statute's clear and unambiguous, and there's no dispute about that statute. The director refused to grant MFA that credit under section 144.190, and the authority cited was section 149.015.4, which is the state cigarette excise tax statute. That statute, I would submit, is clear and unambiguous, just as the refund statute is. And what it does is it provides that the state excise tax is to be shouldered by the consumer, that the sales tax should not be charged on the pass-through of the excise tax, that if sales tax is charged on that pass-through of the excise tax, the sales tax shall be either returned to the consumer or remitted to the director. And once that sales tax is remitted to the director, the vendor has no right to seek a refund. That's clearly what the cigarette excise tax statute says, and it's unambiguous. And to this point, the director has not pointed to any language in the statute that is ambiguous that would require...
Well, what the director said, as you know, is that by the time you ask for the refund, the portion had been added that says, for any amount illegally or erroneously overcharged or overcollected as a result of imposition of sales tax by the retailer, upon amounts representing the tax imposed pursuant to this chapter, the money at issue here, the $90,000, and any such tax shall either be refunded to the person who paid such tax or paid to the director. And their argument is there's only two options, refund it to the person who paid it, pay it to the director, even if previously you could say, or you could ask for a credit. Now that only these two options are given, you didn't have the third option of or apply it as a credit to other taxes owed. And that was very specifically put in here in a very unusual fashion by the legislature. And if you were given a credit, that would be inconsistent with the legislature in giving only these two other options instead.
My response to that, Your Honor, and that is the argument, and to a certain extent, that is what the Administrative Hearing Commission found, too.
Yes.
This is in reference to the 2001 amendment. And what the 2001 amendment says is either return the tax to the consumer or pay it to the director. You can't keep it. And you could have a situation, I assume maybe you did have a situation, which is what triggered this legislation, where a vendor erroneously collects the tax, realizes before it files the return and remits the tax to the director it made a mistake. These are cash sales typically, so the vendor has no idea who the consumer is. And so the vendor realizes its mistake and keeps the tax. What the 2001 amendment does is address that precise issue. And what you'll find here in this case is my client did remit this tax to the Director of Revenue. It did one of the two things that the legislature required. It remitted the tax to the director. What the director is doing, however, is pretending like the tax was never remitted. What the director is saying is, yes, you paid this tax, but we're going to pretend like you didn't, and so you get no credit for this. And as a result, the taxpayer, the vendor, ends up paying $91,000 more tax than the legislature had ever envisioned.
Well, the subsection you're referring to in 149 doesn't allow for a credit. So why would the legislature preclude a refund but yet still allow credit under your argument?
Well, what I would submit is that this was intentional on the legislature's part. The legislature presumed to know the law, presumed to know that the refund statute in Chapter 144 allows both a credit against other taxes due and a refund.
But in this particular section, they prohibit a refund, and there's no mention of the word credit allowed in that subsection. So where is the intent from the legislature to allow credit?
Well, the refund statute is what evidences the legislative intent to allow the credit. What is happening with the excise tax statute is it's trumping the refund statute with regard to the refund remedy. But it is wholly silent with regard to a credit.
And you're saying there's a basic statute that says if you overpay, you either get a refund or you get a credit. And that's generally applicable. And the question is whether it fails to be applicable here because the excise tax statute has specific exceptions.
Absolutely.
And it does clearly say you can't get a refund.
The statute clearly says you can't get a refund. The statute is wholly silent with regard to credit. In fact, the word credit does not appear in the excise tax statute. And so the legislature's silence evidences that the legislature did not intend to trump the credit provision in Chapter 144.
But doesn't then the language that I refer to suggest that maybe it did?
Well, I believe that the language in the 2001 amendment literally says either pay this over-collected tax to the director or return it to the customer. You cannot keep it. My client never kept this tax. My client paid this tax to the director of revenue. Of course, my client didn't know it had overpaid and over-collected until years later.
So someone, under your theory, someone who paid the tax erroneously and then quit doing business in Missouri, they'd be stuck. The director just got to keep the money because they don't get a refund and they don't have anything to credit because they haven't continued doing business.
Correct. But a credit has value to the vendor only if the vendor has underpaid tax on some other transaction. What you find in this particular case is my client underpaid tax on other cigarette sales during the second half of this audit period.
So if the client had fully paid all the other taxes, then they would not be able to get this money back.
Absolutely.
Is that a strange way to set up the statutes? Or happens to be there?
I think the legislature intended exactly what it said, because the difference between MFA's construction of the statute and the director's construction of the statute is MFA construes the statute such that if a vendor overcollects, the vendor cannot reap a windfall. In other words, the vendor can't pay it to the director and then seek a refund and stick the refund in its pocket. However, if a vendor, and it's not easy for vendors to get all of this right, as you can see in this particular case, vendor undercollects on some transactions, overcollects on others, Section 144.190 is designed to deal with that. You net them out.
You don't want to hurt them. You want to do rough justice. But if there's extra money there, it's not going to go to the seller.
That's correct. And I think the legislature intended that. I think, in fact, the argument is the result the director seeks in this case is not within any reasonable expectation of the General Assembly, because the result is essentially a $91,000 penalty against an innocent tax collector, for the state.
If the retailer gets the credit, then it's a benefit to the retailer. Or what's the net effect? Do they not just collect tax on future purchases?
Well, I don't believe retailers have the choice of not collecting a tax on future purchases. I think the law is abundantly clear that there's an obligation to collect the tax that the law requires. However, and I think in every audit I've ever looked at in 10 years of doing this, I've never seen a taxpayer get it right. There's always mistakes on both sides of the ledger, and what the statute at issue, 144.190, says is you net them out. You net out the mistakes, because what the state wants to do is collect the correct amount of tax in the aggregate. It's not so worried about each individual customer being charged the correct amount of tax, although that is important. So it's a credit. It's a credit that the vendor cannot pocket. I can't see a vendor, certainly my client, didn't intentionally undercharge cigarette customers during the second half of the audit cycle. It just was confused about what to do here.
But what if they had intentionally done it and then used that to pay the other taxes they otherwise owed? In effect, that's what they would be able to do if we gave them a credit.
If they intentionally undercharge tax, there's statutes in Chapter 144 that would make that a crime.
Okay.
just like intentionally overcharging. So, you know, I think this is designed to operate exactly the way the MFA suggests the court should interpret it. And literally, it is what the statute requires. The statute doesn't even mention credit. It doesn't forbid a credit. Admittedly, the excise tax statute doesn't authorize the credit. That's authorized in Chapter 144 and in Section 144-190.
Are there any rules of construction? You argue that the statute isn't ambiguous, and yet two interpretations, which both seem fairly reasonable, have been argued. What if, in fact, it is ambiguous and there are two interpretations, are there rules of construction that aid us in saying which one should be applied?
Yes. And in fact, the Administrative Hearing Commission recited the fact that this is a tax statute and it's supposed to be strictly construed against the director and in favor of the taxpayer. And I believe we cited that in our opening brief. If you do determine that 149.015 is ambiguous, you should give the taxpayer the benefit of the doubt.
And is the taxpayer the consumer or the retailer?
The taxpayer is the retailer.
And why is that? Isn't it just a pass-through?
The cases this court has adopted under Section 144-190 interpret that literally. It's the person that is legally obligated to remit the tax that is the taxpayer, and it is actually my client, MFA, that's the entity legally obligated to remit the tax. That's why the director is coming after my client for the tax underpayments, not those consumers who purchased the cigarettes and didn't pay the full amount of tax on them.
Because it's practically impossible for you to be able to refund the money to the consumer.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. Certainly for items like cigarettes, which are largely cash sales. I mean, if these were automobiles, yes, I'm sure there'd be a record. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
May it please the court. The legislature intended to deny a retailer such as MFA a credit for erroneously collected and remitted sales tax on the state cigarette tax. In this case, MFA did not attempt to refund some $91,000 in sales tax erroneously collected from purchasers of cigarettes. Moreover, MFA is attempting to offset its own separate undisputed sales tax liabilities with monies purchasers of cigarettes should not have had to pay in the first place. Those liabilities include sales tax not paid on MFA's not paid on sales at MFA's tire and auto repair stores, sales tax not paid on its own in-state purchases of items, and sales tax not paid on local cigarette taxes.
Is there any suggestion that was intentional that they failed to pay those sales taxes?
No. Even if MFA were to prevail in this case and to receive a credit, it would still have to pay some $8,000 in its own separate undisputed tax liabilities. So MFA has not paid the correct amount of tax in the aggregate, and it will not be subject to a penalty or a tax increase if it's denied a credit. The legislature doesn't have to deny a credit the way MFA says it should have done it, by an express prohibition. Otherwise, the language of a statute is both the starting point and the ending point of statutory construction.
But why isn't there an overlay that if in general you're entitled to a refund or a credit of overpaid taxes, which is the general rule, isn't it? Unless there's an exception, in general, if you've overpaid your taxes, you either get a refund or it gets credited to other taxes.
That's the general rule. Okay. This case is the exception.
So his argument is, since it's an exception, it had to specifically say no credit. Why isn't that a good argument?
It's not a good argument because that argument elevates statutory language above statutory construction. Looking at language is a tool that the courts use to get to legislative intent. And it should not use one tool at the expense of another.
Do you think the legislature really thought this issue would come up?
I don't know. What they were trying to do, the purpose of that 2001 amendment, what they were trying to do was to solve the problem that was created by the express prohibition of the refund. That prevented the consumer from having any ability to get some restitution for tax that was paid that it should not have been paid. And so the 2001 amendment said that the retailer pays it refunds it to the consumer or pays it to the state. And those aren't equivalencies, because why would the legislature expect the retailer to say, or why would it say, oh, there's some tax money, there's some money here that shouldn't have been collected. It's not the state's, it's not tax money, but give it to the state anyway. There's no equivalency between those two things.
But you know, opposing counsel's argument is that it says if you've overcharged or overcollected, which occurs once you take the money, you don't have to pay your taxes at that point. You've overcharged or overcollected the money. They did $99,000. They overcharged and overcollected. It says you have two choices of what to do with it. Either give it back to the consumer or pay it to the director. Here they paid it to the director. And the issue is, does the director get to keep it, or does the director credit it towards some other payments, or pay, or send it back to him to give back to the consumer? But that the choice is before he pays his taxes. He either has to remit it to the director or pay it back to the consumer. And the statute was not intended to preclude him from getting a credit once he'd actually paid.
Well, statute says shall either be refunded or paid to the director. And then it goes on to say the director may recoup from the retailer overcollected taxes unless it has already been refunded.
Why doesn't this all apply before the retailers ever paid the money, when opposing counsel says this is intended to apply this language when the retailer realizes, oh my gosh, I've collected all this money and I shouldn't have done that, and what do I do with it?
Well, I'm not sure I follow you, but what I will say is that when...
Well, what do you understand opposing counsel's argument to be that language means? Because I don't see you addressing it. He's saying it's just saying, what do you have to do when you've overcollected money? You either refund it or you pay it.
And not realize you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's the risk they take. They need to understand the law better, I would say, because it was their obligation to refund the money first. And if failing that, then to remit it to the director. And it's not impossible to refund the money. There are, I imagine, some cigarette purchases done by debit and credit card. You can locate purchasers through that type of transaction. A retailer could put up a notice asking for people to come in and say, I purchased cigarettes and I happen to have a receipt. It's not impossible for a retailer to identify consumers and then to refund the money.
But what if what if the retailer can't refund 100% of the money? Is there a mechanism then for them to come back to the Department of Revenue and say, we tried, but we were unsuccessful?
And then obtain a credit or a refund?
Mm-hmm.
No. In that event, the statute's clear. The money is transferred to the director as if it was unclaimed money, unclaimed property, not tax money.
What about I'd like to ask you about 144-190.
All right.
Point two. Now, if I read that, if any tax penalty interest has been paid more than once or has been erroneously or illegally collected or has been erroneously or illegally computed. Now, this is a tax that has been illegally collected, right?
Right.
Okay, then it says, shall be credited on any taxes then due from the person legally obligated to remit the tax. That would be Mr. Downey's client, correct? MFA, the retailer.
Correct.
Why do the literal terms of this statute apply, don't they?
Not in light of 144.
Well, we're going to get to 144. I mean, this applies. If I didn't look at anything else, I would say 144 applies.
I agree.
190. Okay. Now, we also have 149.015, which has the language about it has to be paid over. If we read them in conjunction, the way Judge Stiff has suggested, both statutes have meaning. Yes. Once you collect it, it either has to be paid to the state or has to be refunded. That statute has meaning. Now down here, if it was illegally collected, it shall be credited. That statute has meaning. To read it otherwise would deny any meaning to 144-190 in this situation, wouldn't it? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is to adopt your construction, you're saying 149.015 deprives 144-190 of any effective meaning.
In this circumstance?
Well, I was going to say it doesn't deprive 144 of any effective meaning in all cases.
No, but I mean in this circumstance.
In this circumstance, it does.
Your argument is that's the intent.
Just an exception to 144.
Was there any language someplace that says notwithstanding other section or specifically notwithstanding 144 or 190? Is there some language like that tucked into the statute?
No, not in 149. And the reason for the exception here is that is the nature of the cigarette tax is borne by the consumer, not the retailer.
So 149, which is the cigarette tax chapter.
Yes.
So you're saying that this 149.015.4 is an exception only applies to the excise tax, the cigarette tax?
You went a little too fast for me. 149 is an exception to 144.
Right. So this only applies in the situation of excess collected cigarette tax.
Only applies to the excess sales tax collected on the excise cigarette tax portion of the sales price.
Right. But other sales tax errors can be
fall under
credited.
144.
Mm-hmm. So it's the general rule that the statute in Chapter 144 is a general statute that applies to all sales and potentially excise taxes, but the 149 is a specific statute where they have chosen to provide the rule how this is handled for cigarette sales tax.
I agree. Yes, an exception is like an exception to the general rule is like a specific and a general.
Right. So your thought is that the legislature intended that the retailer bear the risk of both under and overpayment then. In other words, you're responsible to pay the tax. If you don't collect it, you have to pay it. If you collect more than you were supposed to, you don't get any credit for it.
Well, the retailer's the not responsible to collect any sales tax and cigarette tax, period. It's not the retailer's burden.
But the risk is if the retailer messes up, they bear the burden.
Well,
I mean, if they underpaid it, they have to pay what they should have paid, and if they overpaid it. And that may be what the legislature intended here because
right.
they wanted people to be very careful in this circumstance. But if they overpaid it, you have to either refund it or the director keeps it.
It all flows from the nature of the cigarette tax, which is not imposed on the retailer. It's imposed on the purchaser, and it all flows from that. And that results in the situation here. But I have to say that even if MA were to prevail, they still owe tax. They have an underpaid tax here.
So they still owe the $9,000, but how is that relevant? Is that relevant to this argument?
Well, it's relevant in the sense that MFA says there's going to be a penalty and a tax crease, and it's a taxpayer, and that's just not the case.
When you argue the difference between the cigarette tax that it's imposed on the purchaser, not on the retailer. Is that different than the general sales tax? Is that imposed on the retailer?
Yes, I think the statute begins saying for the privilege of doing business, there's hereby imposed upon the seller. For instance, MFA assumed for the sake of argument in this case that the sales tax on the local cigarette taxes, not on the state cigarette tax, was its obligation. And that is why the sales tax on the local cigarette tax is included in the assessment. No more questions. I'll ask that the court affirm the decision of the AHC.
Thank you, counsel.
If I wasn't clear in the briefs, MFA understands that it owes $8,000 of tax, that it underpaid its tax in that amount during this audit. What it disputes is the additional $91,000 of tax that it actually paid to the Director of Revenue. The director's kept it, and now the director wants another $91,000. The fair result in the case is the strict literal reading of the sales tax statute 144-190 and a literal reading of the cigarette excise tax statute 149-015. I don't believe that any decision of this court has ever said you ignore the words of the statute in favor of what you think the legislative intent is. All the cases I've read say if there's no ambiguity, there's no room for statutory construction.
It still seems odd to me, though, that in effect he only benefits by underpaying another tax. It creates a great incentive to underpay other sales taxes because you never know there's going to be some sort of offset. If you pay everything, I mean, it's hard to prove intent. But when in doubt, don't pay it because you'll get a credit later.
I understand your point, Judge, and I think those might be policy arguments to advance to the legislature, but the words of the statute are what we have, and that's what the legislature gave us. And if you actually look at the facts of this case, cigarette customers were overpaying and were overcharged. Cigarette customers were also undercharged. We can't say they're the same ones. If we could say they were the same ones, I think the director would say no problem. But these customers that were undercharged tax were undercharged tax during part of this audit period and after this audit period. And I am sure the director of revenue will come after my client for that underpaid tax. And so the fair result, I think, is what the legislature is always shooting for here. Here, the vendor serves as the collection agent for the director of revenue in the state of Missouri. And there are mistakes. And I think 144-190 recognizes there are mistakes. And when you erroneously, over-collect a tax, that is to offset under-collections of tax. That's what the legislature said. And nothing expressly in 149.015 trumps or overrules that. It does expressly overrule the refund. It doesn't expressly overrule the credit. So we would ask the court to reverse the Administrative Hearing Commission decision with instructions to reduce the assessment to that approximately $8,000 figure. Thank you.
Thank you.